Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Big Daily Blend show here on Big Blend Radio. You know, we're almost at the end of April, but we can't forget that April is International Guitar Month, National Poetry Month, and Jazz Appreciation Month. And, you know, every fourth Sunday, we have Joey Stuckey on Big Blend Radio with us. And so I said, hey, what do you think about talking about these three topics? Actually, I don't really think I could throw a topic at Joey that he wouldn't have something to talk about. Is that right, Joey? Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well, my friend. Yeah, I am rather proficient at running my mouth. So that's,
I didn't mean it that way. You've been around the block, literally.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. I have lived a very full life, so I have a lot of experiences, and I'm also very curious about just about everything. So I'm interested in almost everything out there, and that's one of the things I love about doing what I do, teaching and performing and all these things where we travel all over the world, is because you get to meet so many interesting people that are interested in things you've never even heard of before. And so by having these wonderful conversations, you know, when you're hanging out around different places and, you know, meeting new friends everywhere you go, then you do have a lot you can talk about.
Well, let's talk about, you know, travel the world, which you've done. How many countries do you think you've been to at this point?
I don't know. I think you're probably still ahead of me, but
no,
I have been,
I don't think so.
I have been all over Europe. Like there's everywhere in Europe, just about, Western anyway. And then all of the United States and, all of those different areas. One of the places, well, there's really three places I haven't been four that I really want to go, but I'm not sure I'm physically up to it. And that is Australia and New Zealand, because the air travel just sounds like it would be absolute hell.
I have friends that talk about that, even going to South Africa too.
I just don't know. I would love to go to Africa as well. I know that's your old stomping ground, but the, there's lots of different things, that I'd have to consider. So it was just being someone that has, you know, as a brain tumor survivor, with health challenges that they have to manage very carefully, I don't ever like to get too far away from great hospitals. So that's always a concern. But I also would love to go to the Antarctic. I really would. I have a friend whose son, got out and went to Antarctic and worked as a volunteer at one of the polar, science stations. Just to do it and see what it was like. And I think he was there for 6 months or 3 months, I forget. But, you know, that sounds amazing. The fact that I'm blind and some other things like that, I'm not sure I'm rugged enough.
I know. There are actual artist residencies aboard these ships that go with the scientists. And we've interviewed some musicians who have gone to Antarctica and done, and artists that have gone, and they kind of are working music and science together. Glenn McClure is one, and he listens to the ice move, but he's taking science and how they have the sound waves and the decimators of, I don't even know what I'm talking about, but like the decimator, like the sound of movement of ice and melting of ice and glaciers and underwater and above. And they do these wonderful sound graphy things. And I'm just going to be stupid because, you know, I don't want to be wrong of what I'm telling you. So I'm just going to dumb it down to Lisa level. So they have these wonderful sound waves, and he takes those sound waves and turns them into orchestras.
I would love to do something like that. I'm just not sure, like, you know, how safe it would be for me to do it. I'm not a coward, but I also like to play it safe.
I think it's fat. You know, all I know is I'm not into the cold after this last winter. Hell no. But I think we have to really understand, these sounds of the earth. It's very interesting. Today we're recording this, everyone. I know this is the fourth Sunday here on Big Daily Blend, but obviously we record our shows, and today we're recording on the eclipse. And I'm like, Joey, I know you're not out there, doing like, let me look at the eclipse. But there's a sound, they say, that goes with the eclipse. And that's what Nancy's like, well, and I'm like, we're not in the path of totality, but there is a change of light. And
Sure.
with that, there is a crispness. And I don't know how to explain it, but there is a change of sound that goes with the change of light. I don't
Well, I mean that
have
makes
no clue
I
what
have
to
a
say
yeah, I
about
haven't
it.
experienced an eclipse like that. I honestly would have loved to have played. There's been several music festivals around the eclipse, and I would have loved to have played one of those. I think that would have been way cool to play, right as you're having totality or something close to it.
God, everyone's playing Pink Floyd today.
I know, but I think it makes sense to me as someone who's an audio person. It makes sense to me that there would be a difference in sound because there would theoretically be some difference in what's happening in the atmosphere. But also, because of the light change, it seems to me there would be different patterns in nature that were disrupted. And I know several people were talking about there were some night animals that came out. Thinking that it was nighttime, and so there were some different bird songs and some different animal sounds that they could hear
The
today.
animals know.
But
Nancy, that's what Nancy's been doing. She's in the Nancy finished the taxes and is hanging out with animals, going, the woodpeckers are coming out at different times right now where we are.
So I mean, it makes sense to me that there'd be a difference in sound there. And also, we can't, as human beings, our sensory organs, sonically, are fairly limited from roughly 20 hertz to 20 K hertz, and that's not really realistic. There are very few people that hear 20 K that's not, a teenager. That's more of a people that can hear that are on the outside of the curve. But what is interesting to me is, we've got our Sagittarius A star, which is the black hole in the center of our Milky Way,
See, I knew you were
produces.
going to go here. I knew it. See, that's why I brought it up, because I knew you were going to go. You're going to go in the
Sagittarius
black
star.
hole.
So the black hole is producing a B flat, 52 octaves below middle C. Now we can't perceive that sonically, but you certainly it's out there and it's happening. And when there are people like myself who occasionally I can hear a security system ringing. I can hear a real high-pitched noise on somebody's security system when I walk by a lot of times. So there are sounds that we perceive in ways that are complicated and hard to understand. And what I mean by that is that, I might not physically be able to listen to it and say, oh, there's a sound at say 40 K. My ears can't detect that as a sound, but you can detect it as a presence, if you will. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all to think there were some interesting sonic things happening today during the eclipse.
Well, okay. That's interesting about I've listened to some of the black hole things, and I'm like, why wouldn't
They're
it
called
make the sound?
sonifications. The thing about the only thing about the sonifications, and I want you to know that before Twitter went to hell, and now I worked so hard. I worked so hard to have about 4,000 followers on Twitter, and now like my posts are just not throttled are not getting the same reach because I'm not paying for the verification. But anyway, before that, I commented on these sonifications that NASA has been doing, and I wanted to know, especially when it comes to the black hole. I said, "Look, the sound that I'm hearing, is that enhanced and brought into a frequency that we can hear? Is that actually the sound of the black hole? Or are you arbitrarily assigning it that sonic value?" And I had a whole discussion about this on with NASA on Twitter some
No
years
way.
ago. And there are people still reposting and responding to that thing that's been two, three years ago that I did that post, and there are still people that are responding to it and talking about it. There are some people that are really out in left field talking about it too. But the problem, what I was trying to understand was how much of the sound that I'm hearing that you sonified is actually the real sound of the black hole, and how much is it you producing a sound. The answer was very nebulous because Twitter is not a good place for articulated conversation. So I never got a full, I never got a satisfactory answer from that.
What, you got 120 characters?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, I think it's 240, but anyway, that's still not, you know, a lot. And I'm a big NASA fan, so in no way am I besmirching NASA, but the answer was complicated in that I think, you know, the impression I got was that it was kind of both. But there are people, for example, when there's a NASA sonification of a star cluster, and where you see a really densely grouping, a dense grouping of stars, and as you pull out of the view, the stars get sparser and further apart. And so they sonified that by having a lot of high, sort of crystalline sounding notes representing the stars. There was no melodic structure as far as Western, you know, music is concerned, but there was just a lot of these sort of high notes, and you can hear them all tinkling away in this massive cacophony when there was a big grouping of stars. And then as the stars got further apart, you just hear these occasional little tones, and that works pretty well. But those were just arbitrarily assigned values to the stars. They did something mm-hmm. very similar that I just read about a couple of days ago, and I wish I'd been in the totality path, because if I had been, there are actually some scientists that passed out, I think, 100 of these different devices for the blind, where you could hold this device and it would vibrate and click faster and faster and faster as it approached the totality of the eclipse.
Oh, wow.
They also had a different device. That was about the size of a cell phone. Yeah, isn't that cool? And they had, there's a different device. That was about the size of a cell phone. They had another device that a different set of scientists were using, where these arbitrarily designed musical notes were assigned to the light, the changing in light. And so it was more of a musical experience. Not like a compositional way, but just like, okay, you know, more red light gives you more of these notes, more blue light, you know, more darkness gives you this. So it became more musically dense, the more the moon eclipsed the sun. Anyway.
Okay.
That's a long digression.
But that leads us to jazz appreciation.
It does. Let me tie it in.
Is that our good segue? Is that a good segue?
That's a great segue. I would, you know what? I would ride that segue. Boom, boom. So I'll be here not all week. Let me tie it all up in a nice bow and say that as you're, I'm sure you're familiar with the Super Collider in CERN. And there was in one of the great jazz festivals, there was a piano player, I don't remember the name, but a piano player that was getting data from the Super Collider. And as particles were bombarding the collider, those were turned into musical notes. And he was improvising a piano piece around those musical notes. So science and art have many wonderful ways they can combine. And honestly, art is about science, because when you talk about painting or sculpture, you're talking about geometry. You're talking about light waves. When you talk about sound, you're talking about sound waves. So they're all very much interconnected in my mind. Anyway.
Well, I think sound waves have energy.
So, oh, yeah. They all do, yeah.
So when you play, we're going to talk about guitars and everything, but there's a vibration from the guitar strings, and then when you amplify it, it actually does carry through to the audience, right?
Sure.
Even when you're listening, it's a different sound wave, two different kinds of sound waves. Oh, we are getting science. Did we know we were going to do weird science today? I love
we
this.
Did not. So your high frequencies and mid frequency. I mean, there are ways to split sound waves into further and further smaller categories. But for our purposes today, we're not going to do that. We're going to stick with high, mid, and
everyone's
low.
Going, you said science, I'm ducking.
Yeah, I know. So we're going to stick with high, mid, low. So high frequencies and mid-range frequencies are very energetic. They travel very, very fast.
And
but they
can
are,
hurt.
They can. There's actually a whole science of acoustic weaponry. And I don't know if you remember, about 4 years ago, I think it was, there was some talk about our embassy in Cuba being targeted with sound weapons.
So
there are people that have talked about that. There are riot control weapons that are sonic, that hit you at about 26 hertz, which is a real.
And you get to have tinnitus for the rest of your life.
Well, these are low frequencies. The weapon that I read about is a low frequency weapon that makes you feel a little disoriented. So about 26 hertz is pretty low. The interesting thing is these high frequencies and mid frequencies are very energetic waves, and they travel very, very fast. So they have tons of energy, but they don't travel very far. And that's why the further away from the sound source you are, the more bass you hear and the less high frequency you hear, because those frequencies are very energetic, but they don't travel very far. And they are what's called directional waves, or they're unidirectional, meaning they come directly from the sound source and travel straight out from it. Whereas bass frequencies are very slow moving waves, and they are omnidirectional. They travel away from the sound source roughly equally in all directions, and they travel very slowly, and so they travel a much further distance. So there is a lot of energy in sound, and this is why, you know, it's so important where you stand or sit in a movie theater, or where you stand or sit in a concert, because you're not getting the real full mix. You know,
you
a
must
sweet
have
spot.
The bass.
Well, and there's a sweet spot, and that's why I was so interested in the Sphere in Las Vegas. If I remember this correctly, and I may be misremembering, but it's something like 160,000 speaker drivers are in that space. It's some astronomical number that's hard to imagine. I want to say 160,000. I may be wrong about that. But anyway, it's a massive amount of speakers, and they say that basically there's no bad seat in the place sonically because it's covered in speakers, and they're directional.
Wow.
Yeah, they're directional, so they, you know, everything's supposedly pretty clear. And I will say, I can't attest to that because Joey did not have the money to go see U2 at the Sphere like he wanted to. It would have cost me about $7,000 by the time I paid for hotel and flight and the ticket and all that stuff. It would probably cost me $7,000 or $8,000, and I can't justify that for an hour and a half of music, much as I wanted to. But the thing that's interesting is I will tell you that there were a plethora of cell phone videos of U2 at the Sphere, and every single one of them sounded great. So, they were from all different parts of the venue. So I can't help but believe that they're probably pretty close to telling you the truth. So they say there's not a bad seat in the house.
Well, that's interesting because you do. Okay. So listen, we're going to get into the sound of sound, right? We're going to weird out because that's where it's going. It's interesting to me about sound waves, like bass. Bass has a different vibration. You know it. If somebody drives up to your car, like next to you, and has heavy bass, we all know, we hear that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You get the butt vibe. And actually, it feels good. It may not feel as good in that car, but it feels better on your side.
They're also going to be deaf at 40, but hey.
Yeah, but I like the butt vibe. Look, it's like ladies, when you have turbulence on a plane, don't get scared. Just sit lower down. Hunker down. I'm just saying.
Hold on a second. Patent pending. That's my new t-shirt. Ladies, when you have a vibration on a plane, don't get scared. Hunker down.
Hunker down. Just sit lower down. All I can say is, like, it feels good. But
that goes on with some of my other t-shirts.
Vibration. Okay, so this is weird because there's atmospheric pressure.
Of course.
Barometric pressure, which also creates sound waves. So,
right.
Look, like, so, I had no idea I had to know science today, Joey. Jeez. But it's okay. I'm in, geek man. I'm in, because what's interesting to me about it all is, like, look, we talked about this the last podcast, and I talked about it with Pierre Bensusan, guitarist. He's been on our show. Every time he comes to the States, he's a phenomenal world style finger style guitarist. Just amazing. And we were talking about this energy and everything, because he's like, when he performs, like, he's like a frigging purist. He's like, don't put yourself in the way of the music. The music wants to do it. You just shut up and do it. He's like purist, and the sweetest man, but damn, purist. Don't, like, it. It's, this is like, you know why Europe's got one up on us, right? I'm just saying, because the arts are so revered in Europe, more than the States, I think, at times.
I think so,
in the
too.
States,
I
mean, in the States, we're putting it as a hashtag pop culture.
Yeah.
And
I think the difference is that in Europe, they still take time and money to include it as part of their daily lives.
It is a lifestyle.
You know,
yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so he's like, it is about the art form, and if the art comes through me and this and that. And we talked about deaf people playing music, and we've done a number of shows of deaf musicians.
Yeah, Evelyn Glennie is my personal favorite.
Oh, my God. And yes, they're bass heavy, but and people, you know, were like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, dude, yes, listen to it. It's good. And there's a different rhythm to, they have a different rhythm. They really do. And it's a little bit more syncopated. It's different. It's interesting, but it still goes with a heartbeat, which is all rhythm, really. No matter what, isn't it always goes to the heartbeat, which is what connects us to nature and the universe and the world and each other. And that is the universal thing. Music goes with the heartbeat.
It's
kind of
funny.
What we do.
Yeah, it's funny because I play to a metronome every day of my life in the recording studio. There are a lot of people that don't like say, oh, you're killing the music. But with time and effort, you can learn to play just as passionately with a metronome as without it. And it's not easy, and it's not natural. The reason that I like the metronome in a recording situation is because it makes the editing so easy.
Yeah.
If everything's to a grid, and everybody has the same reference for that grid, then it really makes any kind of editing that has to happen, you don't want to tear your hair out. It makes it really easy. And you got to keep music fun, and you got to keep music joyful, because if you don't, you're not going to get any work done. But interestingly, I hugged my wife one night, and I had my head on her sort of chest, and I was listening to her heartbeat. And I was like, wow, that's like 160 BPM, and that's not normal. So we took to the doctor and got us some medicine to fix that. But it's interesting.
Oh, wow.
Because so rhythm is very much ingrained in us as human beings. It's a natural, I believe it's a natural, it's sort of, I tell people all the time, it's a natural extension of my spirit, and that's why I do music. But it's a natural experience and part of the spirit of the human condition to do music. And whether you, even if you don't perform it, to respond to it, your body likes to be in motion. There are cycles of motion. There are cycles of time. There are cycles of light. Oh, there are cycles of sound.
That's
so,
it.
You know, there's a lot there to unpack.
That's what Pierre was talking about. A gentleman he knows who plays a banjo really well. I think it was a banjo, a violin. I'm getting it wrong. One of, you know, stringed instrument. Really well, like a virtuoso, like he is. And he's up there in his age in the 90s kind of thing. So please, everyone, if I've got the, I'll, you know, it, anyway, I'm recounting a story, so I may be off on a string or two. But the gentleman was like dementia, Alzheimer's kind of thing, and also went deaf, partially deaf, like a lot deaf. And So his daughter is taking care of him, and his daughter is also a musician and filmmaker and everything. And so Pierre hasn't seen him for a while, but they had like a communication, and she got the instrument, I think it was a violin, out for her dad to perform and play for Pierre or something, even though he's partially deaf. And once she put his hands in the correct place on the instrument, she just had to give him that starting ground. You know, the placement, like, you know, okay, this is a song, but if she put it, because she also performs and plays, she could put his hands in the right chord in the right position. He was able to play seamlessly.
Yeah.
And
There
that's
is
that cycle
something
thing. Isn't that
there.
weird?
Well,
Like,
there's something about memory engrams and music that's related. There's not enough science about this, but it's obvious to me perceptually that there's something to it because we can hear a song and be transported back to a very specific action in our lives. It could be a birth, it could be a date. You know, people have songs, so that's our song. And there's this powerful sense of nostalgia, and there's a powerful remembering that comes with certain music. And when you're going through very specific phases of your life, from kid to teenager to adult, right? There's very specific music that encapsulates what those periods were like for you, and you can remember do things. Like I have a really good memory for years, and I'll test myself when we're riding down the road, and my wife and I have on Sirius XM. And we'll listen to the 80s channel or the 90s channel. I'll go, oh yeah, that was 88. And she's like, how do you know that? I was like, I don't know, I just remember. I just remember. But I mean, I remember music. And then there's something even more, I guess fundamental would be the word I'd want to use. If anyone has seen the presentation that Anderson Cooper did on Tony Bennett, it's remarkable because he was very much disconnected from the world, you know, with I don't know if it was dementia, Alzheimer's, what, you know, I don't know what it was, but he was very much disconnected. And then when the lights hit him and the pianist hit that first chord, he's like, hey, ladies and gentlemen, and man, he was back. It was him. It was him
Did
as a
yeah.
consummate professional. And then he knew Lady Gaga. And
I mean,
when the music,
when they were
yeah.
in the Grammys together, and that showed it happened right there when
Yeah,
he just
and then
was like there.
when the music was gone, he didn't know her again,
Yeah,
and
he didn't
so
know it. Yeah.
there's something very powerful there. But music uses a different part of the brain. I've read a little bit about some functional MRI studies about people listening to music while they're in an MRI and stuff like that. And I mean that's terribly fascinating, but I'm certainly no expert on that. That's outside my bailiwick. But I mean there's certainly some interesting things out there, and of course. You know me, like I don't take the first results as gospel. I like to have peer-reviewed,
Yeah.
you know, very much highly tested information before I take it on board.
Right,
So I
but
don't,
you
so
know,
I don't know.
yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I mean, there's something there, no question.
Well, I know that music, the power that, you know, you talk about since memory, and it's International Guitar Month, so I'll bring this up. I
Yeah, let's
haven't
do it.
played guitar in years, right?
Yeah.
And we were hanging out with our friends, Steve and Karen from the Lion and the Rose Bed and Breakfast. I think you guys have been on a show together. I'm not sure.
I believe so. I've heard about it
Yeah.
anyway.
And he's like, no, play the guitar. And I was like, all right. And I'm like, there's a weird fear factor that goes, especially when you kind of changed your life from performing to not and everything. And I picked up the guitar, and you do know. You don't know everything, and it does come. You just suck at it when you aren't practiced. You suck when you don't practice. Let me just put it, you totally suck when you don't practice. It's so funny when you watch movies where someone hasn't picked up a guitar for years and they can just play bull crappy. Bull crappy through that.
I think I would
There's
temper
some
that by saying,
one out of 100 can do it. Okay,
well, I don't know. I think how I would temper that is I would say that you are not at your peak when you pick it, when you hadn't played for a while. I mean, like when I go on tour, I'm at my peak of my professionals because I'm playing every day. When I'm not on tour, I mean, I lose a little bit of that edge. I mean, it's a very subtle edge.
But we're talking
edge.
Decades, Joey.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, there's something interesting that happens as an educator in music. Like, there's something interesting that happens. And what happens is there are levels of mastery that you will reach in your life. And once you have it, it will never, never abandon you. But until you hit that next plateau, all that stuff that you build up is going to go. So there, like, I can tell you now, I could not pick up the guitar for 10 years, pick it up again and not be as good as I am now. I would have lost some of my edge, but I'd still be decent. It wouldn't be like I'd never picked it up before.
No,
so I mean,
no,
there are plateaus. There are plateaus of, yeah. there are things I know that I'll never not be able to do. But then there are some things that I didn't master that I was getting close to mastering, but if I don't practice, it's gone.
Well, okay. So here's what happens when you don't play for a long time, right?
Yeah.
And so me and guitar, my guitar playing sucks, period. It always has, because I'm a singer and I belong standing and stomping my feet and doing my thing. That's really it. And
when you're stomping your feet, are there grapes involved?
There has been actually in the past. Yes.
Okay. Good enough.
You know that. That you know, but no, honestly, I'm a barefoot singer for sure, because of vibration of sound and
sure
earth connection. I am one of those weirdos, and because I'm barefoot most, and I actually have shoes on right now just because I walk the dogs, but good thing since there were snakes outside, but anyway, yeah. I'm just saying, but at this point in the Southeast, you may want to wear shoes when you take dogs for a walk in the sunshine. But anyway, when I did, and then I did it again. And of course now, like if you touch it once, like you're in, right? You're like, it's like cookies. It's a cookie jar. And the reality is so interesting how you go and play exactly what you want. You know, if you've been away for decades, right? And I'm thinking, oh yeah, I can play certain covers like Whipping Post. That I can get immediately, the basics. Not like you playing Whipping Post. You play Whipping Post. Like, damn, holy cow. Then you add the jazz in there too, by the way, Joey. Speaking of Jazz Appreciation Month, see, boom, bringing it in there. But that actually gives me my bearings, because it's off. It's a different sound. It's I don't know what you're going to call it, but it's like a minor. It's just not in your face kind of music. It sneaks up with you, Whipping Post song.
Yeah, it's
you can be light. Yeah, you're just light. You're just light, and you're going up the scales kind of thing. And it, I don't, Joey, I don't read. I know how to read. I'm a singer. Okay. I know music. I do, but like that stuff. No, I just do it. I can't read. I don't read music for playing it. I just do it. I just do it. Not well, by the way, but, what was fascinating to me is, when you've been away from something for a while, when you go back to it, isn't it interesting how you know exactly what you want to play? Versus when you're in it all the time, there's so much you can play and want to do and do and do, because you're in it and you have 100 songs. Like Joey, I know you've got 100 songs you can play in an instant, right? And you're surrounded by it. And it's like, oh, yeah. When you're away from it and come back to it, they say, you know, when you set something free that you love and it comes back to you, it's meant to be. When you walk away from music for a while, sometimes you come back to it, you go exactly where your heart craves. You know, like of what you've written, or even a cover song or whatever, you know what makes you tick and connects. And maybe it's just the emotion of the time though, too. Or maybe it's just, that's easier. I don't know, but you know exactly where you're going.
Well, I think the interesting thing,
that's weird.
The interesting thing there to me, the way I think about that, is that I've had band practices where I have been relentless, just like grinding the guys into shape, and just like, yeah, we got to practice this again, 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 again. And the thing that I talk about, and I think this is what you're talking about from a different angle, the thing I talk about is practicing so much that when you play, you don't have to engage your mental or physical faculties at all.
It's
and
one.
you just let the music come through. But the same thing happens when you've been playing for a while and you put it down. So after we've rehearsed for a really long period, like serious grinding rehearsals, then I'll take a break for a couple weeks because we've gotten to where I want us to be, and we'll come back and magically be tighter and better than we were at the end of our rehearsals. And that's because we've had a chance to let things clear out. We're not thinking about it so much because the enemy of great art is too much thought. So you should be very deliberate and thoughtful while you're practicing, while you're writing and you're composing. You should be very deliberate and very thoughtful. But then when it's time to do it, you just need to do it and not think. You just need to be in the moment and let all those hours of hard work pay off for you. So the reason that I talk about music theory and practicing and scales and all this stuff is not because those things are laudable within themselves, but because when you master that stuff, you can get your body and your brain out of the way and let the spirit of music be in control. So the only limit is your imagination, not your knowledge or your physicality. And a lot of people stop at mastering the physicality or mastering the mental stuff, and they stop there. They don't take that final step of getting out of the way of the music. So what you're talking about is just sort of another angle of that process. Like when you've been away from it for a while, you're not in it every day. That means you're not thinking about, oh gosh, you know, so-and-so performed it this way and so-and-so performed it that way. Well, I really want to do it this way, but then what if I play this scale? Then what if I do this? And what if I do all that stuff gets filtered out.
It goes right to heart.
It does.
Honestly.
And it really goes to commitment. And the more crap you have flying around your mind, the less committed in the moment you are. So that's real important. And one of the things, there are days where, you know, for various reasons, sinuses or, you know, I have chronic fatigue because of the brain tumor. I don't make adrenaline. So that's a very complicated, and there are days that I don't feel like I'm at my best physically. And I have to perform anyway. And you know, the audience never knows, you know, but my bandmates may know, or my wife might know, and that's about it. They might be able to tell, but nobody else can tell. And the reason for that is because even though I'm not at 100% what I want physically, I'm there commitment-wise. I'm committed 150%. And when I commit in that moment, and it's kind of interesting because I've got a new album coming out. I've got a new documentary. Yeah. We've got a new documentary that's out. It's called Vision. I think I sent it to you.
Yep.
And it's
links in the show notes, everyone. By the way, everyone, that's in the show notes.
Okay. And so I performed live one take in the studio, like 8 songs. And I just played them to be used. I performed the whole song, but I just played them to be used as, you know, background for this little documentary. And the gentleman that I worked with, Michael Whalen, who's an Emmy award-winning composer and real talented, he said to me after we were done with the documentary, he said, you know, all those songs were so good, you really ought to put that out as a record. And so we decided to put out, it's just acoustic guitar and vocal is all it is. And it's coming out in June. It'll be out in June. And it's 6 of the 8 songs. And what Michael said to me, which was one of my biggest compliments, he's like, I couldn't tell that you weren't at your best, but I know you weren't 100% happy because I just wasn't feeling well that day. And, but he said, man, he said, you're so committed when you play that the passion, the art, the spirit comes through no matter what. And all the technical stuff is there too. But he said, you know, no matter what happens, like with your music, it's always enjoyable because you're just so committed in the moment. Mm. And I think that's a real That's a way of life that I live. I commit to the moment.
You commit to it. I did it as a vocalist. I trashed my voice at the beginning, not knowing what I was doing. And I really did. And then lost my voice. And then we were doing so many gigs and it was just insane. And I got to this level of rising above what my voice is. And that's how I learned to use my diaphragm.
Yeah.
And dude, you've got to think, when I was singing, this was pre-Google stuff, man. I didn't have anything. I didn't have. And then people
Which is
were
good
me,
and bad.
Yeah, people are also telling me, do not go to
anyone,
a local
anyone
teacher.
Anyone can put a blog post on Google, so, you know.
Right, right. And people are also telling me, don't go to a vocal coach. You know, but
stupid.
Don't forget, at the same time, I also got accepted into a Madrigal singing choir, and here I am doing, like, hardcore blues rock, you know?
Yeah.
And so this was bipolar opposites, and you had to be able to pull out, you know, I didn't do the Madrigal thing. That's like, what? I had to sight read and sing music sight reading
while someone
played an auto harp and go la 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 la. And I'm like, what? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? I just challenged myself to do it. And I don't know. And then they're like, please come join our Madrigal choir group. I'm like, oh, hell no. You know, I didn't expect to be accepted. You know, and it was scary, and they were so sweet and so nice and taught me a lot. And I appreciate that. I talk about that experience all the time because I was freaked out. I was like, you're going to have to push through this and do this. And that's the same thing as a vocalist too. When I was losing my voice and didn't understand throat versus diaphragm, eventually my body kicked in and said, listen, bitch, this is how you do it. Sorry for the language, everyone, but it's really exactly what happens. And my diaphragm started, like, I learned, whoa, and some friends too also taught me, but really it was my body who said, you want to get through this? You have no voice. You can't even talk, but I could sing. And what got weird was people enjoyed me singing more that way. And
yeah,
I didn't like it because that wasn't necessarily healthy for me, you know. And so there was a lot of, like, I was just out there doing it, not doing, you know, but I do know music and did practice music in all different other spheres than what I was doing. And I will say this, you're really right. I mean, Nancy and I used to play the Warsaw Concerto together as a duo. Don't ask me to do that now or her. But there was a lot of practice that went into doing that on keyboard
as a piano
together as a mother-daughter kid. This is when I was a kid. But I find what you're talking about with this whole thing is like sense memory, right? I believe that it's going to sound weird. I'm going into the weird science because this whole topic of show is like off anyway. We're just doing our thing. But I believe there's cells in our bodies, like our brain is in all our cells. Like I remember when I was 30 or something, they said, oh, you drink alcohol, all your cells are going to die and they don't come back. Well, now we know they do grow back, right? And we also now know that we do have brain cells within our cells. So like our brain, like one cell in your blood or whatever, still contains your actual nucleus of your brain in it, basically, right? So we can regenerate cells, so all hope is not lost, but be healthy as much as you can, basically. But I'm wondering about our bodies. I mean, even understanding how to go back to picking up a guitar, the guitar chords, even if you fumble around a while, but you're going to get it, right? Sense memory, muscle memory. Like,
yeah,
is that there too? Like,
yeah,
our
yeah,
brain,
yeah.
Our heart, our, because there's the same emotional memory, right? That's the one thing we all have with music. Whether you're the musician or not, we have a emotional attachment. But as the musician and the singer or the writer, there's something that I don't believe it's just emotional or brainiac. I think it's in our body muscle stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a biologist, so I'm not
qualified. I know,
I don't
either.
I'm not qualified to talk about cells, really. Although I will say that, you know, we do know that the stem cells, you know, when we start off, cells are cells, and then they eventually become differentiated. So there's definitely the idea of the master blueprints in all the cells is one that I can get behind. Although, like I said, I'm not a biologist, so I don't know much about that.
Yeah, but we'll do that on another show. We'll get someone.
Yeah, well, we can bring my wife online. She'd
oh,
know
cool.
more about than I would. But she's an advanced practice nurse. But the but when it comes to muscle memory, that's actually really a very big part of what I advocate my students to practice. So rather than practicing, they say like the greats, like, you know, the great musicians like Stevie Ray Vaughan and, you know, Charlie Parker would practice 16, 18 hours a day. I can't do that. That's not physically healthy for me. And so each person knowing their own body is very important. All that I would do is get carpal tunnel or something. I can't do that 18 hour. That's crazy. Plus, I want to have a life outside of playing guitar. And, you know, you can't, if you practice guitar all day long, now, granted, I'll never be Charlie Parker. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, he was at a level that's hard to approach. But the point is that what I espouse doing is short 5-minute practice sessions that are extremely focused, where there's no other distraction going on at all. And you do those 3 to 4 times a day. So you're practicing 20 minutes a day, but you're practicing them in short 5-minute practice sessions, and you put time in between them, because that kind of repetition is what builds muscle memory. And the big college word we use for this is kinesthetics. So I'm a big fan of kinesthetic muscle memory practice. I think it's really important. And I think doing the short practice periods are much more powerful than practicing for 3 or 4 hours a day. Now, that being said, if you're working on a show and you've got a whole band, you may have to do a 4-hour practice period, but you're not doing it every day. You're doing it once a week or maybe twice a week. If you're learning new music, that would have to be an additional practice session. But for practicing the fundamentals of your craft, your scales, your arpeggios, your all these different things, different rhythmic patterns, different melodic phrases, you know, you should just practice those in short practice periods. And, you know, for me, like, my time is so limited, and I have to guard my energy very carefully because I have a lot of demands on my time. I don't really have very much time to practice like I would like to. So for me, sometimes I can practice without even the guitar in my hand by listening to a complicated piece of music, listening to it, and thinking about what the musicians are doing is another way to practice without having the instrument in your hand. It's not as good, but it is, like, I can put on something really complex, like one of the most complicated pieces of music out there to play well, and the solo over is Giant Steps. And Giant Steps is Coltrane. And it exists throughout the piece. It changes keys 3 times with the melody. It's in 3 different keys, which is pretty challenging to solo over. And so I'll just get lost in what he's doing and why he's doing it and how he's approaching the rhythm and how he's approaching the fret. And I'll get lost in that. And that's my way of practice. That's also, by the way, one of the ways I do chronic pain management. When I found out I was allergic to morphine, and after I had my hip surgery and my shoulder surgery, I wasn't able to use morphine. I would put on really complicated music and get so lost in the music that I still hurt, but I was on top of the pain instead of under the pain. So there's a lot of interesting things involving music therapy that we could talk about. One last thing I'll share. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole because we got to talk about guitar movement. But one last thing I want to share with it that goes to what you were saying. You were talking about it is interesting that the body has ways of retooling itself to do something it wasn't initially supposed to do. And that kind of got to your point about, you know, cells being able to regenerate and stuff like that. Again, I'm not a biologist, so I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to, in the last 2 years, there's been some interesting research. And as I say, I'm a peer review kind of guy. I haven't seen enough other people doing the research for me to take this all the way to heart. But it does seem to suggest that if you go blind early enough in life, your visual cortex, the thing that's responsible for processing the images you see and transmitting those to the brain, will retool itself to process audio if you go blind early enough in life. So that's one of
that
the,
sounds that, weird to go blind early enough. That's
yeah,
like
yeah. I know what you mean, but I mean, like, if you go blind in your 30s, it's
yeah,
probably not
versus
going to happen. But if you go blind when you're four, if you go blind early enough in the course of your disease, if you have a disease that causes you to go blind or an accident or whatever, if you do it earlier in life, then that visual cortex, there's some data that suggests that it reprograms itself to start processing audio, which is why when people say, boy, you have such an incredible ear and all this kind of stuff when they're talking to me as a blind person, I mean, I do have an incredible ear, but it's not so much that my ears are physiologically better than other people's. It's simply that I process the information more efficiently because it's my primary sense. And why do I process it so efficiently? It may be because my visual cortex has jumped in there and started helping, the auditory processing. So anyway, kind of interesting things.
I find all of this fascinating. I mean, even the whole thing of practicing and being able to, like, years later or whatever, go to where you need to go. That's why I say, like, what you were saying, the importance of practice and basically doing the discipline stuff that we don't want to do. It's what's going to free you later to do stuff. I mean, it's like in any career, it's the same thing.
And it's
you
best
have,
to do
dude,
it early, as early in life as you can, the fewer responsibilities
you have. And go through it as fast as you can. Get it done. Do the chores. Like now, I actually enjoy doing dishes and stuff, you know? I mean, I clean up dog poo as we travel the country to Bed City.
I don't mind doing
and
laundry.
I don't care about it because it's like, it's kind of this other distraction. You're just doing stuff and eventually you learn that the duty stuff in life is the duty that you need to do to get better. And it's what's going to be the freeing thing because you have to, I think it's kind of the soul sacrifice of Santana, right? You have to do the sacrifice to really enjoy it because it's like, if you just had this beautiful cherry blossom life, you're not really going to understand what a cherry blossom life you have unless you have some darkness there. There's no eclipse without the darkness.
Well, that's interesting. You know, a lot of people that are into sculpture say they look at the block of stone or whatever and they see what's inside and they chip away and just reveal the inner shape. And that is how life forges our souls, is that as you go through things that are not pleasant, the impetus for change is when you don't like something. If everything's great all the time, you have very little impetus to change. And if you don't change, you can't grow. You can't become more than you started to be, than you started off being. So I think, you know, going through those moments of sheer hell, if you can stay positive on the other side and realize that you're wiser and better, not that you want those things to happen again, not that you say those things were right to happen, not that you say they were good to happen, but if you can take that negative experience and reveal that true inner self by refining some of the extra excess you don't need anymore, like you do with that piece of marble or that piece of stone, then I think it all kind of works out. That's how I think about it.
I like it, Joey. I like
it. And you know, the other thing I was going to say, to pivot to talking about the Guitar Month real quick, because I know we're starting to run short on time, I wanted to tell you that one of the greatest guitar players in the world and one that's very influential in my mind, not only is a great musician, but is a great innovator for what the guitar is and does, is a guy named Adrian Belew, who played with Frank Zappa and the Mothers, or the Mamas. Yeah. And he also played with King Crimson, with having a very vibrant solo career. But I got a chance to meet him because he's one of my heroes. I got a chance to meet him after a show. I just happened to be in town and he was playing. I was like, oh my gosh. And so I called a friend of mine and said, hey, aren't you his publicist? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, can you get me a backstage pass? He's like, well, probably when you want it. I was like, tonight? He was like, oh, wait to let me know. I was like, hey, man, I just found out. Jennifer was just by chance just read the sign as we were passing by, she's like, "Oh, isn't that someone you like, Adrian Belew?" I was like, "Oh my God." So anyway, I got to meet him. I shook hands with him and told him, took a picture with him and everything, and told him like how much his music meant to me. And I didn't have anything for him to sign. So I ran by a music store and bought a blank book of staff paper where you write the kind of stuff you use for music notation. And I said, "Hey, will you just sign, you know, this page or whatever?" He's like, "Man, you know, I don't read or write music, but if I did, I'd write you a little melody." So here's one of the greatest, most innovative, talented guitar players of all time, especially in the progressive rock genre.
Yeah.
Who plays things in all these weird time signatures and plays all this incredibly complex, very muscular, very physically demanding guitar work, who doesn't read or write music at all. And when you were talking about not reading or writing music, you know, it's certainly, I think, advisable if you want to make music your career.
Oh, I
agree. To be able to read and write music, but it sure doesn't have to stop you. I mean, just because he couldn't read or write music, it didn't stop him at all. And there are lots of really big stars that don't read or write music.
Yeah.
So don't let that discourage you.
I can read music, but it's weird. As soon as I hear the first note, and if I know the song, I'll just start going.
Yeah.
But I'm not. But it's annoying, but it's fun. I want to go into the guitar world. It's International Guitar Month, and you know, and Joey's got a playlist of music he sent us and poetry because it's Poetry Month. And I want to get there, and I want to talk about jazz because it's Jazz Appreciation Month too. And yes, we are. This is a weird music science podcast today, but I want to talk about change. So I want to go to poetry first. Do we even get pennies anymore? I have pennies fall out of my wallet all the time
because
I have a
hole in it. I was going to say something very different.
I'm going to behave.
I thought you were going to say
I know. I have pennies falling out of my wallet all the time because I look a little hole in it. So people get dimes and pennies all the time. And sometimes, you know, you look at them.
So that lucky penny you found probably came from Lisa.
I give lucky pennies all, and I don't want to stop that. I like it.
It's funny.
Yeah. And then some people think, "Oh, I found a penny." It's a, you know, a sign from a dead person that we know, a loved one, you know, up there or down there or wherever they go. And, you know, that's cool too. But, I wanted to touch on this about the change of the world of poetry and books. And this is something I want to talk to you about because we've got your friend that you recorded, right? Poetry wise, Seaborn Jones, which if you listen to this on Spotify, I know you sent me a few tracks to put in a music, but honestly, you need to listen to the whole album.
I agree with that.
No, don't just start from the beginning to the end. I can't put that in a playlist. You need to just go and I'll put the link in the show notes. And this guy's got such a Southern accent and it's hardcore. It's like you feel like you are having a cigarette with him and coffee.
He sounds I'll tell you how I describe him to people. He sounds like a Southern Jack Nicholson on Downers.
Yep. He's crazy. He's crazy sounding, right? But listen, the world of poetry is so important and it's tied to songwriting and storytelling. It's the power of words, right? And guitars have the power of notes and how you do it. It's a different form of storytelling. Music is that. Jazz, too. Jazz has this freeing thing and then it's going to whirl you back in a weird way or leave you hanging, making you wonder. So it's all wonderful. But poetry. So you recorded Seaborn, right?
Yeah.
In your studio. So I want to talk about this power of recording poets because, yes, it used to be back in the day, poetry readings, poetry slams in Chicago. Nancy and I used to run poetry slams in San Diego. Was this internet time or not? Pre-Google time, I think. And during our band stuff, I think it was at the end of our band stuff. And the poetry is so, this is an important thing that ties to jazz, to listen. And you don't know where you're going when you're just listening to it versus reading it. Reading it, you can drink your tea and soak up the words, but listening to it and a performance are two different things. And then listening to it being read by a poet is really fascinating. And I think we're in this age where people are listening more than reading. Authors I know are basically saying that a third, if they do the audiobook, which is problematic because it's expensive to do an audiobook. And I want to get into that with you, Joey, because I have a feeling that you should be doing that. I don't know. I don't know. That's your business. You do all these recording things. But people are listening more than reading. They watch movies and videos. I know you do too, Joey, through listening through them and having the sound effects. Like even today, we had a documentary that we were featuring on a podcast, and I used the trailer even in the audio, and I had to close my eyes and listen to the audio of the trailer. And I was thinking about you. I was like, oh, what would Joey think of this? Here's the audio of the trailer. What is that going to sound like to the audience of the trailer? And then I was like, yeah, don't second guess your audience. They're not stupid, right? So all of it, this becomes this whole different thing of visual to audio and whether it's reading or watching. So poetry, there's the experience at a slam or a reading, which back in the 50s, 60s, 70s was huge. And now hopefully coming back, recording it makes it timeless for people. Seaborn Jones is timeless because he's recorded and out there. See how I slowed down when I said his name? Yeah, I slowed down because his name.
He passed away as well, so it's really important. This is the only recording of him reading that exists. So from that perspective, it's really an important record to me.
So as a producer and recording studio, and also being a blind person who loves literature, the importance of poets and authors recording. And I think if it's a memoir, don't you think they should be reading it themselves if they're apt to do it? Sometimes they should.
Yeah, I generally speaking, I'm in favor of the author reading their own book. And the reason for that is that there are a lot of subtleties in the human voice and how we communicate. And a trained voice is not necessarily a slick voice. It's not necessarily what you want. What you want is the subtext that the authors bring to their vocal performance because they live what they're reading. And I think that that is really, really, really important. There are, you know, a lot of actors in film and television forget about acting with their voice. They act with their bodies so much. They worry about how their face looks and how their bodies look. And I actually got a chance to meet one of my heroes, Avery Brooks, who's a fantastic actor, played Captain Sisko in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, along with a ton of other stuff. And I said, I just walked up to him and they said, he's not going to take a picture with anybody, so don't ask him. But when you're shaking, when you're when he's signing your whatever he's signing, you can take a picture of you guys standing, you know, you're on one side of the table, he's on one side of the table. And I walked up and shook his hand and just said, hey, I just want to thank you so much for how much you dedicate your acting, not only to the visible and the physical, but to the her. I said, because so much subtext of what the character wants and needs and is feeling and comes through. And so few people do that anymore. And he was very moved by that. And he said, you know what, I'm going to be in this picture. And so he actually took a picture with me. He also was the host of Jazz at Lincoln Center for a while. So you probably heard he's got an amazing voice. But the reason I mention all that is that, you know, that guy's a professional actor, acts with his voice. And, you know, he would be great to narrate some books. I'm sure he has. And actors that can do all these different voices, that's awesome. That's really cool. But when it comes to something autobiographical, I still think that having the author read it is the coolest thing. Like right now I'm reading Debbie Harry's autobiography.
Oh, cool.
And you know, it's an audiobook and she reads it. And that makes it, and she's not a good narrator, to be honest. Like from a technical standpoint, pretty blah. And I can tell she's looking down at the book and not looking at the microphone. So like sonically.
Oh, no way. That's,
yeah,
oh yeah.
Sonically,
maybe her
it's kind
eyesight.
Of,
she's elder now.
Yeah.
You know.
I was like, sonically, that's kind of annoying. But it's also whoever set the microphones up fault because they should have realized, hey, she's looking away. Let me reposition
the mic. Move the mic.
Yeah,
move
me,
the mic.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I mean, so there's some blame, plenty of blame to go around. But anyway, you know, she's not a real good reader. Her timing is a little weird. But when she really is in the moment telling you a story, it's so cool to have her read it. Now, Billy Idol has an autobiography out that is excellent. And he reads it, and he does such a great job. So, you know, I just think, you know, if you can get the author to read it, I think that's way better. You know, Stephen King has a really weird voice.
Yeah.
And he has read the Gunslinger novels. I think there's like maybe 10 of them. I forget how many there are. There's 10 or something, or maybe 7 or 10 or something. And, you know, the Dark Tower series. And he read the first three when they were out on audio cassette the first time back in the 80s and 90s. He read the first three himself. And then later, with the fourth book, I guess he didn't have time to do it or didn't want to do it or whatever. And he hired a narrator to start reading it. And then he went back, took his originals that he had read off the market and had that same guy reread the first three. But Stephen King said something to me that stuck with me my entire career. This is before I was a professional recording engineer. He's like, I'm not a trained voice. I'm not a good narrator, but I'm the author and I know how these characters speak. And I thought that was really profound. And when you hear his read, it sounds like this. He's real. It's real nasal. It's not a very pleasing voice. And yet when he reads those books, those characters come alive. So I think it's really fantastic. You know, with Seaborn Jones, I met him when I was 17 years old. I went to an art summer camp and I heard him read some of his poetry. And I was so blown away by the performance of the, not only the words, but the performance of the words, the cadence, the rhythm, the way he juxtaposed things, the expression, that I said, man, one day when I'm a professional recording engineer, I'm going to be in the music business, but one day I'm going to record this guy. And so finally around 2006, I happened to bump into him. I'd lost track and I was like, hey man, I've been wanting to record you for so long. And we did it. We did it because I wanted to do it because I wanted to hear those performances again. I have not broke even on that book. I'll be honest with you. Like, I put it out on my record label. I have not even broken even on it, but I don't care. It's one of my most prized recordings because it's something, a goal I set for myself when I wasn't in the business. And I achieved it like 20 years later, you know? He's such an incredible performer. And when you read it, his stuff is great. But when you hear him read it, it's just so much better.
Well, I think this is the thing where I talk about this power of recording writers, storytellers, poets, authors. So is that something you would do? Like, because I know authors are battling with this now and looking at AI too. And
oh,
I know we've got, you know, they're starting to do that. And
no, I'm diametrically opposed to this. Okay. So. Yeah,
I know. This is the weird science conversation today.
I think AI has its place. I think, but replacing creatives is not one of them. I am with all the SAG actors and people that said, hey, you can't record my performance and then have AI take that and animate that character and do scenes I didn't do. That's totally right. You shouldn't have AI making music. You shouldn't have that competing in the public arena. It's hard enough to make it as a musician as it is. And then there's all kinds of ethical questions and legal questions about who owns the copyright how you protect AI work. And then there's all kind of questions about if you take all the Joey Stuckey albums and use that as data and train your AI using my music so that it can create music, then shouldn't I be paid for that? There's all kind of stuff about that. I think where AI would excel is things like virtual assistant to help you stay organized. I think being the hands and eyes and ears of the disabled would be an excellent way to use AI and really enhance, you know, humanity. I think to give robots jobs that are dangerous for man to do might be a way, but then you disenfranchise those very skilled, very specifically highly trained workers. So maybe that's not the right thing. It might be good for AI to do more space exploration. It'd certainly be cheaper. So anyway, there's some places where it could work, but I record audiobooks all the time and I have recorded.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've recorded a number of authors, one from California, a bunch here in Georgia. And so, it's really one of my passions because that's how I read. As a blind person, the audiobook is the best way for me to read.
Wow. Okay. So now we're going to move on to guitars. Finally, we're getting to guitars.
Guitar. That's right.
Good God, we've done a lot, man. I feel like I feel like I need to go to the lab. You know.
Seriously. I want to blind you with science.
I know. Oh, there you go. That happened today with the eclipse. It's like
that's
I know.
True.
I'm gonna watch my tongue on politics, but some people looked up right at the eclipse a few years ago and you know, they didn't go blind. You know, it's interesting about it too. Like I was, you know, go to take the dogs out today. I'm like, I don't want the dogs to look up, you know, because the weather is, you know, I'm like, what, you know, what do you do? It's interesting. But guitars, international guitar, jazz. Okay. Whew, we have touched on jazz. We have touched on guitars today. So I feel like we've done part of our duty here today, Joey, but when it comes to guitars, it's so
the main
hard.
The main thing I wanted to talk about before we wrap things up is that I sent you some samples of some guitarists, mm-hmm. and it is by no means an exhaustive list. It's only 7 tracks.
We can't.
Because it would be impossible. So this list of guitars has nothing to do with the talent of the performer or the writing. It's not about any of that. It's about people that changed the industry by something technical they did. So mm-hmm. the first person to bring the guitar into the forefront, and I'm talking about the electric guitar, is Charlie Christian, roughly 1939. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's jazz, because there's so many different styles of guitar, too. We could be here forever.
Jazz guitar is one of them. It's like a chop. I mean, even on keyboards, they have jazz guitar versus like society piano, right? Like, okay.
Well, there's so many different genres of music that, and there's all these smaller subgenres and stuff. So that's why I say this list is not exhausted. But I wanted to make sure that people knew about Charlie Christian because a lot of people don't. There are very few recordings of his that are still in existence. There's a handful. You'll see the same 4 albums configured different ways, but it's basically the same set of recordings over and over and over again, owned by different people in different configurations, mastered versus remastered and all this stuff. But a lot of what Charlie Christian did was part of like other people's orchestras. But he brought the guitar out of the strictly rhythm element that it had been traditionally hailed as and brought it in as a lead melody instrument. And again, this is with the electric guitar. You really couldn't do that with the acoustic guitar prior to having electric guitar amps. It was hard to have an orchestra playing and you hear an acoustic guitar. So anyway, he was the first. And then Les Paul is a huge. He was a good guitar player. I had the pleasure of meeting him as well. He was a good guitar player, but more importantly, he revolutionized what's called sound-on-sound recording and tape loops and a lot of stuff inside the industry. So a lot of very mechanical things that changed our industry, like multi-track recording, you can really attribute to Les Paul. And then we move on to Jimi Hendrix, which is radically different than the first two. because Hendrix started using the wah pedal, he started using the octafuzz, he started really distorting the guitar amp in profound ways and using the guitar in new ways that had not been done before. And so that's kind of, so those are the kind of people you'll find on the list. Tom Morello is on the list because he's crazy. And so he started using the whammy effects in really profound ways. And he became more about rhythmic guitar playing than melodic guitar playing. So there's that. Eric Johnson was someone that really changed how guitar was thought of. He had a very bell-like violin kind of tone. Of course, Eddie Van Halen was sort of Jimi Hendrix's successor, if you will, and all of that. So there's a lot of the seven songs that I chose will showcase some guitars that you may be familiar with. Or may not. And then, of course, I had to put the Edge from U2 in there because he is the guy that started using the Ebo, which is a magnetic device that makes your string vibrate for as long as you want it to. And so he started using the Ebo and started that whole craze. And he also used delay in a very profound and intricate way. And Edge is not like a lead guitar player or anything like that. He's a rhythm guitar player. But he does some really profound stuff. So there's some songs for you to enjoy. Some people you may have heard, some people maybe you haven't heard, from several different genres. It's not an exhaustive list, but it's a great way to get to sort of wrap up the month listening to some guitar.
Well, okay. Well, it's international guitar, so I wanted to just bring this up. What about slide guitar? I have a thing about it.
It's beautiful.
It's my thing. And I mean that I think Ryan Bingham, that's why I like his music so much, is that. And I know there's lap steel. We have to do a whole thing on guitars. Okay. So everyone tuned. We're going to have to do a guitar show.
There's so many great guitars out there. And you know, I'm not a good slide guitar player. To be fair, I've only tried to play slide guitar for about 20 minutes, and I just didn't have a natural connection with it, partly because it removes, not being able to see, it removes my hand from the string in a way that I don't like. I haven't really tried to play it, but I made the mistake of trying to play along with Jerry Douglas for about 10 minutes and decided that I was not that.
Well, I think you know what, slide guitar is just like it's a magical thing. It is,
and it's typically a different, you know, typically people play it in a different tuning and other open E, open G. There's a lot of elements going into playing slide well. I just haven't played around with it enough to be good at it. I just don't have the time or interest, but I love it. I love it. I just don't do it myself.
Well, let's do a guitar show. That's going to be our next thing. Let's just do that. We need to. We'll get back to this, everyone. We will. But we did some good science. We did guitars. We did a little jazz. You know, jazz is a whole. There's no way we could do jazz, guitars, and poetry all in one show and really do it justice, right? You can't. No. You can't compete with that.
This is a bite-sized appetizer of that.
Yeah, but we did weird science today. That was classic. I love that. Joey, we love it. Thank you so much. Always fun. Everyone keep up with Joey at joeystuckey.com. Links are in the show notes. We're going to have a nice playlist there. I'm going to put a poetry list together too because Patti Smith, man, just saying she has to be in there. I got some poets that's got to be in there. And the power of poetry changes things. Maya Angelou,
really good hip hop is great poetry. You know, there's an argument. You know, I know a lot of people. There are some really great hip hop out there that are true poets. Dr. Dre, Eminem, the musical Hamilton, all really fantastic stuff.
Exactly, that's the point. It changes. It's allowed to change, just like music can go to death metal and metal, and it can go to, you know, hey, now we're going to play Baroque. You know, it's allowed to be what it wants to be, and hey, Lisa, it's allowed to cross over, right?
You should always go for Baroque.
No.
Boo! I can feel y'all
No.
saying boo.
No. No.
Anyway.
I'm an entrepreneur. So there you go. I don't like the word entrepreneur. It's like,
It almost
Anyway.
sounds like manure.
I know. I don't like it. I don't like it.
It's
But I'm all
overused.
for it.
It's
I'm all for it, but I don't like it. All right. Thank you
overused.
so much, Joey. It's always fun. We'll chat next month and let's get a guitar. We're gonna do guitar group. That's what we're
Excellent.
gonna do. We'll do it. Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.